We're back at it. We're back in the book of Ezekiel. We are in chapter 26 this week. What we have this week is not too hard to understand. It's a little wordy, but God chose to have it recorded like this for us. So consequently, I'm not his editor, so we're going to read all of it. Next week, just in preparation, and I know you all read ahead. Okay?
Amen.
From where we stopped today, I want you to continue reading. Because next week we're talking about the Prince of Tyre, but we're also talking about the King of Tyre. They're two different people. One is a literal prince. One is a king. But you'll realize who's being talked about in Scripture as you read that part. I'll go over it with you. This week, we are talking about Tyre. It's the capital of, or was the capital of, Phoenicia. Now you know all about the Phoenicians, right? Who was some of the most notable things about the Phoenicians were they controlled trade in the then known world. That was it. That was them. We have Tyre being the capital of Phoenicia. Phoenicia is situated on the east end of the Mediterranean Sea, and it is also situated on an island half a mile out in the Mediterranean Sea. So it was a two-part city, and we'll look at those little things as we go through. They were friendly people, at least during the time of David and Solomon. Hiram was their king, and David and Hiram and Solomon and Hiram, they all got along quite well together. And what helped with this was, how many of you have heard of Jezebel? Okay. Jezebel, how many have heard of King Ahab? King Ahab he's listed in the thick book of unrighteous kings, bad kings, kings that didn't honor God. But anyway, Jezebel, King Ahab's wife, was the daughter of Ethbaal, and he was a king of Tyre. So you see that this eastern Mediterranean area is all intertwined with a lot of these alliances. And a lot of the alliances, and actually Solomon was first to really promote and propagate this, a lot of the alliances that happened in what we now know as the Middle East happened because Solomon married all the king's wives, or took him as concubines. And that stopped repression. If I had taken my wife from a rival nation, even a nation that was at odds with us, that king wouldn't attack because he wouldn't want to kill his daughter. So that's how peace was kept for a long, long time. The destruction of Tyre, and it certainly was destroyed, can't find it on a map, was foretold in Scripture by Ezekiel. And what we're going to read now, first six verses of chapter 26, is that the destruction of Tyre, excuse me, is prophesied. In the 11th year, on the first day of the month, now, 11th year from what? Yeah, doesn't that just raise your curiosity? Remember the last official king of Judah? When the Babylonians came and sieged the city in the late 600s, would actually be the 600s with the lowest number. Remember, we're counting backwards. The late 600s was taken captive. Anybody remember his name? Starts with a J. I'll let you think about that a minute while I find my place. There were two that sounded alike, Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin. Remember them?
Yes.
Okay. Jehoiachin in 602 or 603 BC was taken captive by the Chaldeans, Babylonians. Sorry if I change names up on you like that. By the Chaldeans, taken captive to Babylon. That's when we start counting. 11 years from when the king was taken captive and taken to Babylon. So that's why the 11th year makes sense. Maybe your edition was published a year later than mine. In this class, I told you over and over, I'll always give you an answer to your questions. Never, I said, I'll give you an accurate answer. I don't know. What translation are you reading? Okay. The different translations, New Living Translation, even for going from King James to NIV, are taken from different manuscripts. King James is taken from early manuscripts. The NIV is taken largely from Dead Sea Scrolls, which were found later. But they date to earlier. So you're going to have a conflict in from what translation what is taken from. Okay, New Living, I'm not familiar with that. I use NIV. My wife, we bought her a Bible for last Christmas, NIV, but it's the new NIV. So her Bible doesn't even read like my Bible, although the dates do remain the same. So I don't know the history of the New Living Translation. It's okay. Yes.
I have a New Living Translation, but it also gives a footnote on that.
Okay.
It also says February 3rd during the 12th year. That's the one. My footnote says in Hebrew in the 11th year on the first day of the month of the Hebrew calendar year. Since an element is missing in the date formula here, scholars have reconstructed this probable reading in the 11th month of the 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. We're okay now, right, Sal? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be a long Sunday school class if you hold me up on the third word of this thing, you know. No, I'm only kidding you. It's good to bring things like that up because, you know, it is confusing. But of course,
you know, everything you say, I think, oh, that's it. And then, what? 12?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good lesson to be learned, that don't trust everything I say, first of all.
You always say,
okay? I'm not the final authority. And none of what I give you, no, I can't say that. A lot of what I give you is not original. I'm studying just as hard or harder than you are, with many commentaries and the internet, to find out some interesting things to give you. So, you know, I'm apt to come up with something a little crooked too once in a while. Ezekiel, as we go through this, is going to picture a great storm. We can understand it maybe as hurricane. How many of you have been on a ship in the midst of a hurricane? You were on
a little tiny one.
You were, yeah, you were part, you were on in Mama's Navy, right? Coast Guard?
We were on the little white ones that go out when the big gray ones come in.
We've always teased, the Navy used to tease a lot more. We got a lesson when I was in the Navy on not to tease about the Coast Guard. We had a Dependence Day cruise prior to going to Vietnam. My wife, I had in Florida then, we had just gotten married. I took her down to Florida for a couple months before I floated off to Vietnam. So we decided to have a Dependence Day cruise. So on a Dependence Day cruise, you have women and children on, you know, wives, girlfriends, rugrats, you know, everybody. And about 900 of them, I was on an aircraft carrier, we had 3,200 crew. So we had a lot of room. All we were gonna do was launch an aircraft and recover it so that the dependents could see an aircraft being launched from an aircraft carrier being recovered on an aircraft carrier. Well, we went out, got a little foggy. So we ran from Jacksonville Beach, Florida, down to Daytona. Didn't find a clear spot. Turned around, came back up the coast. We did it a couple times. We could never find this hole in the fog to launch and recover an aircraft. So we finally decided to scrap it. Turn around. First of all, we're in a yard period. We're preparing to go to Vietnam. We're getting a lot of new equipment. We didn't have any radar. You couldn't see this far. It was that foggy. The captain decided to try to get his bearings and go in by dead reckoning. Only he probably knows what that is. You travel at a certain course on the compass for a certain amount of time at a certain speed, and then, as Bugs Bunny would say, you make a left in Albuquerque. And you travel that road for a little while at a certain speed, a certain heading, and you make a different course correction. Going into the port of Mayport, Florida, we were riding along. Crew didn't know. I didn't know. All of a sudden, we felt this bump and heard this terrible noise. So I had my own repair shop. Carol and I were in there. Don't worry, we were married. Carol and I were in there. We decided to go out to the port side, left, and looked. Here's the ship, and we saw a rock pile. We drew without most of the aircraft wing on, about 38 feet of water. But we saw rocks. Bad sign. Carol and I went across the ship to the starboard side, right side. Hatch and looked out. Hey, you know what? There's another half of a rock pile. we had run through the rock pile. 53,000 tons, we went right through, of course. We waited till high tide, and we couldn't get off. We waited till the next high tide. We couldn't get off. My wife and 899 other dependents and children were on that boat for 32 hours. Another high tide was coming. The Navy in all its glory yelled, "Mama!" And we called the Coast Guard. They brought out some great big ocean-going tugs and pulled us off the rock pile. So after that, I've never bad-mouthed the Coast Guard. Because except for the Coast Guard, we'd have had to wait for the weather to clear. But anyway, what I was getting at is Ezekiel here is going to talk about a really bad storm. Like you would get in the Mediterranean. I've been in the Mediterranean, really bad storms where if there's anything on a shelf, it's off. You're like this, but you're also like this, and then with that mixed in, I watched a lot of people who didn't think they got seasick get seasick. It's almost scary. This is a situation, I could relate to this as I was reading this. Let's continue, let's read the first six verses again. In the 11th year, on the first day of the month, the word of the Lord came to me, "Son of man, because Tyre has said of Jerusalem, 'Aha, the gate to the nations is broken, and its doors have swung open to me. Now that she lies in ruins, I'll prosper.' Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says, 'I'm against you, O Tyre, and I will bring many nations up against you, like the sea casting up its waves.'" This is figurative, but for Ezekiel to make an impact and have us understand what's going on, he's going to liken this to a great storm, natural occurrence, which people understand, especially if you're familiar with the sea, and almost everybody back here was familiar with the sea. And the reason God's going to do this to Tyre is Tyre was profiting from everybody in the known world. If they could decrease the number of some of the trade nations, they could not only reduce their competition, it's kind of like what ShopRite and Rio Grande did with that, what was it, Stop and Shop?
Yeah.
They bought them out and just closed them. That's the best way to get rid of competition. They would prosper from increased opportunity for trade. Plus, they could go in and plunder the nation that went bankrupt, if you will. And that's what Ezekiel's saying is, what did Tyre say when Jerusalem failed? Let me give it to you in different than aha. Oh, goody, goody. Now we can go in and get all the stuff they had. Not knowing the Babylonians carried off just about everything. Now remember, this hasn't happened. This is prophecy. This is what's going to happen. So they're really overjoyed that Jerusalem is going to fall. Or as it's Ezekiel's writing here, it sounds like it already has. And what did God say? And I keep referring to this back over and over. Genesis chapter 12. He said to Abraham about the Jews, "The people who bless you, I will bless. And the people who curse you, I will curse." Now, I know there's been a lot of bad publicity about the Jews lately and Palestine and all that. But I'll tell you one thing. After reading from Genesis 12 through the end of the Bible many times, and never seeing a retraction for that, there's no way I'm bad-mouthing Israel. They're still God's chosen people. He's still coming back to be their king, and Palestine won't even exist. Don't fall into any of this, how badly, poorly the Jews are treating the Palestinians. They don't belong there. God gave the Jews that land. Be firm in your convictions to stay with Israel. Those who bless my people, I will bless. Much better than the other option. So, verses 4 and 14 come to pass. I'll read verse 4. They will destroy the walls of Tyre and pull down her towers. I will scrape away her rubble and make her a bare rock. Verse 14 refers to the bare rock also. I didn't understand significance here until I started getting curious about words like I usually do. I looked up Tyre. What do you think the definition of the word Tyre is in Old Hebrew? Rock. It was pretty easy. I didn't need this long explanation when I looked up that word, rock. Out of the sea shall become a place to spread fish nets, for I have spoken, declares the sovereign Lord. The island off half a mile off the coast is, in fact, even today, a flat rock where fishermen take their nets and spread them out to dry. She'll become a plunder for the nations, and her settlements on the mainland will be ravaged by the sword. Then they'll know that I am the Lord. Why is God going to do all this? First of all, the Phoenicians, and summed up in their capital, are not revering God. Who are they revering? They're revering the almighty, what we'd say, dollar. Whatever the currency of the day was there. Their whole motivation and their whole reason to themselves for existence was to prosper materialistically, monetarily. And what does God want to impress on anybody? Why did God save you? The answer's right here. Then you'll know that I'm the Lord. Did you revere God, those of you who were adults before you were saved, did you revere God as God, or just merely assent to the fact there must be a God? I had no reverence for God, but he saved me, not really for my benefit. He saved me for his own glory. See, he doesn't give gifts so that you'll be somewhat of notoriety, so that you'll be known as a great this or that. God saved you and gave you gifts for his glory. Any benefit that we get out of our salvation is secondary to his most important purpose, is his glory. If we all performed with that mindset, if we all used our gifts, talents, and abilities, which are all God-given, for the real purpose of God's glory, we wouldn't be so inactive as Christians. We're inactive. We're not doing much. The Muslims are gaining ground. The false religions of the world are gaining ground. Our rights and privileges in this country are being taken away from us. And what are we doing about it? When's the last time you protested anything? Or me? I'm not pointing a finger. I'm in you guys. I'm part of you guys. So, Tyre, I'm going to read my notes, but something else popped in my head. Tyre successfully fended off and repelled the great dynasty that was before the Babylonians, or the Chaldeans. Who was the assailant then? What was that nation, that empire, that preceded the Chaldeans? The Assyrians. I know you've heard this before, and you're going to hear it over and over again until everybody just does what Dave did and drowns me with Assyrians. Very good. The Assyrians never were able to capture Tyre. Babylonians, however, after they had destroyed Jerusalem, their next campaign was the Phoenicians and Tyre. How long do you think that campaign lasted? Anybody want to take a guess?
Years.
How much?
Years.
Years? That's good. Now I'm going to ask a really hard question. How many? What year was Jerusalem overrun by the Babylonians? 586, 587. Okay, we're kind of splitting years there. Depends on what calendar we go from. Immediately thereafter, 586, 587, Nebuchadnezzar decided to go and take over the Phoenician Empire. Capital, of course, as I said, being Tyre. Why? What did the Phoenicians ever do to Nebuchadnezzar?
They were rich.
Yeah, they had a lot of good stuff, didn't they? Yeah. Yeah. If you're a thief walking down the street and you see a mansion with a gated jar or a rundown, tear down type house next door, which one are you going to rob? Yeah, goes without saying. Phoenicians are a rich nation. The Chaldeans stand to gain a lot financially. That's not the biggest reason. The biggest reason was God sent the Babylonians against Jerusalem for her idolatry. God sent the Babylonians against Tyre for the fact that they went, aha, when Jerusalem fell. And you know, it took 15 years. You can make a note of that, Pat. Your years, you can put a little note there. From 586, 87, for 15 years, Nebuchadnezzar led an assault against Tyre. The city was really, really well fortified and protected. As for the island half of the city that was out in the Mediterranean Sea, half a mile, that was a little harder to get to. So what did Nebuchadnezzar do? Anybody know the history? He built a causeway from the mainland to the island. He built a highway that his chariots and everything could roll across. And that's how he overcame the island half of the city of Tyre. Pretty industrious. You couldn't do much by ship. They didn't have cannon. So you couldn't just go up there and shoot cannon and blow the walls down. You had to have, what do they call it now? Boots on the ground? You had to have boots on the ground to do anything.
Gary?
Yes?
Weren't the Phoenicians famous for their shipbuilding?
Absolutely. The most famous.
Yeah. And their alphabet was used by the Hebrews? Or part of it? The Hebrew alphabet came partly from the Phoenician alphabet?
Okay.
I thought I read this.
Fireworks? I really don't know that. So you probably have my curiosity up and now that, enough now that I'll find out. But no, you know. But they were the most famous shipbuilders. The ship that's going to be described here, as we understand it, is probably big enough to have a crew of about 200. And there'd be 50 oarsmen on the sides of the ship. 50 on each side, or 25 on each side. Let's read a little further. Verse 7, for this is what the sovereign Lord says, from the north I am going to bring against Tyre Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, king of kings, with horses and chariots, with horsemen and a great army. He will ravage your settlements on the mainland with the sword. He'll set up siege works against you, build a ramp up to your walls, and raise his shields against you. He'll direct the blows of his battering rams against your walls and demolish your towers with his weapons. His horses will be so many that they'll cover you with dust. Your walls will tremble at the noise of the war wagons, or war horses, wagons and chariots when he enters your gates as men enter a city whose walls have been broken through. The hooves of his horses will trample all your streets. He'll kill your people with the sword, and your strong pillars will fall to the ground. They will plunder your wealth and loot your merchandise. They will break down your walls and demolish your fine houses and throw your stones, timber, and rubble into the sea. By excavation in the area that was formerly known as Tyre, stones and rubble and timber has been found in the sea. This really happened. I will put an end to your noisy songs, and the music of your harps will be heard no more. I'll make you a bare rock, and you'll become a place to spread fish nets. You'll never be rebuilt, for I, the Lord, have spoken, declares the sovereign Lord. There is no Tyre. What can I say? God said it would never be rebuilt. And it has not been rebuilt. That is what the sovereign Lord says to Tyre. Will not the coastlands tremble at the sound of your fall when the wounded groan and the slaughter takes place in you? The coastlands didn't tremble at the fall of Tyre. What trembled was the then known world economy. That when Tyre fell, Tyre being the leader in the economy, every around surrounding nation trembled. Look what happened when the Twin Towers were blown up in New York City. Stock market shut down. World trading houses closed. What would have happened if all of New York City was blown off the map? How long would it have taken the world economy to recover? Now we know the world economy is so interdependent upon all the other nations right now that we are world economy dependent even on our enemies. Where does some of the oil come from? Iran. What are we doing? We're going to send 15,000 soldiers over there. No, 1,500 soldiers over there. Do we get... That's Iraq.
Iraq.
Thank you. Iran. Do we get oil from Iran? Yes. Not a large degree, but we still do get some. Even though supposedly we have an embargo on them. We get oil from all over the Middle East. Right now, we're not buying too much because we're using the oil in our country, our reserves, and new oil that we're finding. And that's why your gas is only $2.60-something a gallon now. We're using our own stuff. The rest of the world economy is hurting because of that. So you see how interdependent we are. What's going to happen with gas prices, if we're allowed to investigate and pipeline our shale oil. The oil they're getting from shale reserves. Gas will be under $2 a gallon. How much is gas in Venezuela, where they produce a lot of oil?
It's like 17 cents a gallon.
Eight cents a gallon. You know, you probably haven't seen them yet, but you see commercials on television for Citgo, and they provide home heating oil at pretty good discounts for people who heat their home with oil. Where is that oil coming from? Venezuela. Who's in charge of Venezuela? Starts with a CH and ends with Chavez. Huh? Technically he's not in charge anymore, but yes. So if you want cheap home heating oil, buy it from our enemies. That's all I got to say. Destruction, as we just read from verses 7 through 14, has been accomplished, at least in prophecy. And we know that from historical records, the destruction was as stated. Verse 16. Then all the princes of the coast will step down from their thrones and lay aside their robes and take off their embroidered garments. Clothed with terror, they'll sit on the ground, trembling every moment, appalled at you. Then they will take up a lament concerning you and say to you, how you are destroyed, O city of renown, people with men of the sea. You were a power on the seas, you and your citizens. You put your terror on all who live there. Now the coastlands tremble on the day of your fall. The islands of the sea are terrified at your collapse. Well, Tyre wasn't lamented or cried over because lives were lost or people were triumphed over that maybe were in trade agreements with other nations. What was the lament for? Oh my gosh, I've lost my livelihood. That's the only reason for lament. Is the center of trade in that area of the world at that time, which was really the known world at that time, collapsed. And when the leader collapses, everything around it just has no leadership and falls and fails. So that's why they're being lamented here.
But Harry, this is a prophecy, right?
That's absolutely true.
Now, was Nebuchadnezzar even born at this time?
Oh yeah, at the time that Ezekiel is prophesying this, yes. Had Isaiah prophesied this, yeah. Isaiah prophesied almost 100 years earlier, so no, he wouldn't have been born. But Ezekiel, Jeremiah, and Daniel were all alive and well when all of this actually took place. Yes. For those of you not used to coming to Sunday morning Bible study and prayer before church, we're going to start the book of Daniel next week. So, come out. Verse 19. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. When I make you a desolate city, like cities no longer inhabited, and when I bring the ocean depths over you, and its vast waters cover you, then I'll bring you down with those who go down to the pit. To the people of long ago, I will make you dwell in the earth below, as in ancient ruins, with those who go down to the pit, and you'll not return or take your place in the land of the living. I'll bring you to a horrible end, and you'll be no more. You will be sought, but you will never again be found, declares the Sovereign Lord. God's sovereign. And when people meet up with destruction, destruction by God, when unsaved people's souls are sent to the pit, there's no escape from the pit. So if you have a neighbor that's unsaved, next time you get to look him in the eye, ask yourself, why am I not saying anything? And I know that this person is going to the pit forever. Maybe that'll loosen your tongues. My tongue. We all know people that aren't saved. And we all know people that aren't saved that we haven't said a word to. Shame on us. Yes?
With this prophecy of Tyre going to another Mesa, do we know when this when did this come to fruition?
Started in 586. It ended 15 years later. Tyre was finally vanquished by Nebuchadnezzar in 572. 587 to 572. 572 was the finality of the destruction of Tyre by destroying the other half of the city through building the causeway half mile out in the Mediterranean Sea. Okay?
Harry, in my footnotes, it says Alexander the Great actually conquered the island in 332 BC.
Yes, he did. And I said Nebuchadnezzar all along, didn't I? Now, it was Alexander the Great that built the causeway. Thank you, David. Correct that for my mouth being three steps ahead of my mind. Nebuchadnezzar was successful. Let me clear this up. Nebuchadnezzar was successful against the city on the mainland. Not until 322. Do you have a footnote there that dates that?
332.
Not until 332 did Alexander the Great figure out how to conquer the island community of Tyre by building the causeway. Everything I said prior to that was wrong. Okay? Just clear it up. I'd rather have it cleared up. I make mistakes too, my thinking.
So, at that time, then Alexander the Great had control of the mainland city.
Yes.
He just had to move out into the
He
island.
Had to conquer the other part of it, yes. But the mainland city was finally conquered in 572. Not until 332 was the island taken over by Alexander the Great. Okay? Now we got it straight. Now we all know. Thanks, Dave. If anybody finds something like that, please bring it up. You're not going to embarrass me. I want it right. I don't want to ever say anything wrong. In chapter 27, the word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, take up this lament concerning Tyre. Say to Tyre, situated at the gateway of the seas, merchants of people on many coasts. This is what the sovereign Lord says. You say, O Tyre, I am perfect in beauty. Your domain was in the high seas. Your builders brought you your beauty to perfection. They made all your timbers of soft trees from Sinair. They took cedar from Lebanon or to make a mast for you. He's picturing now, figuratively picturing a great ocean-going merchant ship. The merchant ship is in reality Tyre, a seafaring nation. Oaks from Bashan, they made your oars of cypress wood. From the coast of Cyprus, they made your deck inlaid with ivory. Fried embroidered linen from Egypt was your sail and served as your banner. Your awnings were of blue and purple from the coast of Elisha. Men of Sidon and Arvad were your oarsmen, your skilled men, O Tyre, were aboard as your seamen. Veteran craftsmen from Gebal were on board as shipwrights to caulk your seams. All the ships of the sea and their sailors came along to trade for your wares. Men of Persia, Lydia, and Put served as soldiers in your army. They hung your shields and helmets on your walls. We can understand what's being described here. We're describing a beautiful, well-outfitted ship built with nothing but the best. Well, we're not really looking at a ship. We're looking at a city. And the city was so secure, thought themselves to be so secure. They had lots of warriors. But what did they do with in verse 10b? They hung their shields and helmets on the walls as decorations because they were invincible in their own eyes. Was that wrong?
Too big to fail.
Too big to fail. Have you ever heard that adage before? The United States is too big to fail. Verse 11. Men of Arvad and Helak manned your walls on every side. Men of Gamad were in your towers. They hung your shields around your walls. They brought your beauty to perfection. Tarshish did business with you because of your great wealth of goods. They exchanged silver, iron, tin, and lead for your merchandise. Greece, Tubal, and Meshech traded with you. They exchanged slaves and articles of bronze for your wares. Men of Beth Togarma exchanged war horses, and mules for your merchandise. The men of Rhodes traded with you, and many coastlands were your customers. They paid you with ivory, tusk, and ebony. Do you get the feeling so far that from what we've read and all the different nations that were at interplay with Tyre, that Tyre was kind of the center of everything? They had people employed and doing business with Tyre from the whole world, or the world as it was known at that time. I mean, we got a lot of nations mentioned here, some of which I don't know whether I pronounced right or not, but you didn't know it either, so you let it go. Let's go on. Verse 14, men of Beth Togarma exchanged war horses, and mules for your merchandise. The men of Rhodes traded with you. And many coastlands were your customers. They paid you with ivory, tusk, and ebony. Aram did business with you because of your many products. They exchanged turquoise, purple fabric, embroidered work, fine linen, coral, and rubies for your merchandise. Okay, that's all the heathen nations around, everywhere, dependent on Tyre. But look at verse 17. Judah and Israel traded with you. They exchanged wheat from Minnith and confections, honey, oil, and balm for your wares. Even Judah and Israel were intertwined with Tyre. Damascus, because of your many products and great wealth of goods, did business with you in wine from Helbon and wool from Zahar. Danites and Greeks from Uzal brought your merchandise. They exchanged wrought iron, cassia, and calamus for your wares. No, I don't know what half this stuff is either. That's not important. Dedan traded in saddle blankets with you. Arabia and all the princes of Kedar were your customers. They did business with you in lambs, rams, and goats. The merchants of Sheba and Ramah traded with you, and merchandise they exchanged, the finest of all kinds of spices and precious stones and gold. Haran, Canaan, Eden, and merchants of Sheba, Asher, Kilmad traded with you. In your marketplace they traded with your beautiful garment, beautiful garments, blue fabric, embroidered work, and multicolored rugs with cords twisted and tightly knotted. The ships of Tarshish serve as carriers for your wares. You're filled with heavy cargo in the hearts of the sea. Your oarsmen take you out to the high seas, but the east wind will break you to pieces in the heart of the sea. The most important trade ship, figurative, on the whole Mediterranean Sea is going to be broken up by a storm. Figuratively, this is a ship that encounters a really rough sea and falls to pieces. Not figuratively, this is Tyre that a great storm's going to come against and break them into pieces. What's the great storm?
Nebuchadnezzar,
586, 587 to 572, when Nebuchadnezzar came and assaulted and destroyed the main city. Verse 28, shorelands will quake when your seamen cry out. All who handle the oars will abandon their ships. The mariners and all the seamen will stand on the shore. They will raise their voice and cry bitterly over you. They will sprinkle dust on their heads and roll in ashes. They'll shave their heads and they'll put on sackcloth. They'll weep in anguish and have bitter mourning. And they'll wail and mourn over you. They'll take up a lament concerning you. Who was ever silenced like Tyre, surrounded by the sea? When your merchandise went out on the seas, you satisfied many nations with your great wealth and your wares. You enriched the kings of the earth. Now you are shattered by the sea in the depths of the waters. And your wares and all company have gone down with you. All who live in the coastlands and are appalled at you. The kings shudder with horror, and their faces are distorted with fear. The merchants among the nations hiss at you. You have come to a horrible end and will be no more. Ezekiel here gave us a rather long list of nations that were responsible for not only building, enhancing, beautifying, and manning ship of Tyre, but he goes into great detail that all these nations lamented the destruction of Tyre. Or, looking ahead as Ezekiel's doing, God's telling him all these nations will lament the destruction of this great merchant ship, or Tyre. All the nations of the earth are interdependent today. I already said that. What is the key to the interdependence? It starts with inter.
Internet.
And ends with net. Internet. Very good. Internet. Almost all commerce is carried out electronically now. Salesmen don't show up with the vacuum cleaner and fuller brushes at your door. When's the last time any of you saw a fuller brush man? Or a guy who, as soon as you open the door, throws a handful of dirt on your floor and comes in with his vacuum cleaner to show you how good it'll clean it up. I wouldn't let him use my electric if he did that to me. I want to see how good your vacuum cleaner works with only your stuff. Bring your own one. The kind of nice guy I am. But the internet controls trade today. Just as Tyre controlled all the world's trade in this day. Where would you be without the internet? Well, for me, I wouldn't be able to look at the weather or Fox News in the morning. Think how dependent you are on the internet. How many times have you emailed me?
In the past 6 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably have spent $400 in gas and or postage to come over to my house to give me the message without the internet, right? The internet controls our lives. The internet of Tyre controlled the lives of everyone else here. Admiration for this great ship, this great nation of Tyre, the city of Tyre, is brought to desolation. And as Pat pointed out for us, Nebuchadnezzar was the great storm that sunk the ship. That ended it. Why? They were proud. they were invincible. Ron said they're too big to fail in their own eyes. Thing I think is interesting is Babylon didn't do this of their own volition. Babylon was sent by God to bring punishment to people of Tyre, just as God eventually is going to send punishment to Babylon. But when the Jews wouldn't obey God, the Babylonians did. When God said to Nebuchadnezzar, go and destroy the city, Nebuchadnezzar went. No other reason for it. And because Babylon did such a great job of destroying Tyre, God really didn't think he did. He got paid enough. So in the next few chapters, we're going to find out that God's going to basically say, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylonians, you carried out my will here. You did what I wanted, and you did such a good job at it. I'm going to give you Egypt too as payment. You're going to find out there's a lot of intrigue that's going to happen over Tyre. We'll close with Revelation chapter 18. You'll turn there with me. Revelation chapter 18, 18. Not hard to find. It's the last book of the Bible. It ain't like I asked you to find Nahum. Okay. Revelation 18, 17 through 19. In 1 hour, such great wealth has been brought to ruin. Every sea captain and all who travel by ship, the sailors and all who earn their living from the sea, will stand far off. When they see the smoke of her burning, they will exclaim, was there ever a city like this great city? They will throw dust on their heads and with weeping and mourning cry out, woe, woe, O great city, where all who had ships on the sea became rich through her wealth. In 1 hour, she has been brought to ruin. Rejoice over her, heavens. Rejoice, saints and apostles and prophets. God has judged her for the way she treated you. Is it just me, or does it seem like what I just read in Ezekiel is repeated again in Revelation? And what is being defeated in Revelation? What is falling? Babylon the Great. Absolutely. Not the Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar, but the renewed Babylon of world-controlled religion, money, commerce. And when God sinks that ship, the entire world is going to lament its passing. I mean, the two passages sounded so much alike. When I read Ezekiel, I couldn't help but think of Revelation. Yeah. And it's like so much the same. When God seeks or finds evil, there's no escaping. The tyrant, the Antichrist, his kingdom that he sets up, called Babylon the Great, the renewed Babylon, going to be destroyed. The whole world is going to lament. Tears in their eyes. But the last verse I read, verse 20, what does it say? Then a mighty angel picked up, verse 20. Rejoice over her, O heaven. Rejoice, saints and apostles and prophets. God has judged her for the way she treated you. God's story never changes. His whole procedure never changes. Tyre was judged by God so that they would know he's the sovereign God, the God that's in control of everything all the time. The same God that'll be very much alive, in control of everything all the time, his will be carried out. And what are we supposed to do? Rejoice. Our great God has triumphed. Of course, we'll be rejoicing from heaven that God's will is carried out. But those left after tribulation on the earth that were our believers can rejoice too. That they're finally liberated from the tyranny of the Antichrist. Questions, comments? Doesn't it scare me about New York? I really don't like New York. The subway system confuses me, so I don't go there.
I don't either, because I think they're going to fall into the sea one day.
Doesn't it scare me about New York? No, none of these world events scare me, quite frankly. Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, none of it scares me. In fact, I'm intrigued with it all because it's the signs of the end times. And I'm so ready to go, I can't stand it. Any other questions or comments? Next week, remember, we're going to talk about the Prince of Tyre and the King of Tyre. So remember, they're two separate people we're talking about. Figure out who's who.